Welcome. This is Winning at Life. Yeah, it's live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Thanks for listening. Hey, invite a friend. Let's talk about money, annuities, retirement, Social Security, investments, growing money, bonds. What do you want to talk about? 504-260-0995.
I am your co-host, James Parker. Look, let's just jump right into the first story I want to do here, and that's the Lakers big guy, Anthony Davis. He sounds familiar. Have we heard of him before? No, the former New Orleans Pelican, who was here for his first couple of contracts, now with the Lakers. And they gave up half of their ship for him. They gave up Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, I forgot the other guy's name, like a handful of draft picks, like I think they're three forward first round draft picks, something incredible like that. The headline is pretty shocking here. He is foregoing. He says no thank you to a contract extension with the Lakers for $146 million. Like, he turned down $146 million. What's he doing? All right. One of the reasons why I brought this to the table today, before we even get into the nuance of what's going on and how NBA contracts work, is I want to address a bunch of the comments that were online under this article. And it's just sad to see how unfamiliar with basic economics our fellow man can be, because it's the same thing you hear so often. No one should be making that much money. $146 million. There's no way Anthony Davis can be worth that much money. And there's variations on it. You know, it just stinks that we have basketball players. They're playing a kids game and they're millionaires, but the kids teaching at my kids' elementary school is only making $50,000 a year. I don't know what they make, but I want to blow this out of the water, but I don't think I'll be nice about it. So let me turn it over to you.
If there's a teacher that can figure out how to get 30,000 kids into the arena a few times a year and teach them algebra or whatever all at once and stream it as well, that teacher probably could make pretty big money in that case. My point is, can that teacher teach a lot of people at once and get others to kind of, oh, we need that stuff, let's pay, let's go there and get that. That's what generates that income, is when you can take and multiply yourself through whatever means to reach a large amount of people. And that's really what it comes down to. And but you can't just be some regular math teacher. You need to be the all that's doing that, not your normal math teacher either. Then you could command a lot of money.
Yeah, see, that's a great path you started taking us down, because right there it makes me question, well, you know, we do have the capabilities for teachers to reach a wide audience, almost infinite in size, but oh no, there's classroom size, Gregory. We're not supposed to have more than 20 kids per teacher. These old, outdated public school models of what education were supposed to be 50 years ago has been set in stone and has not progressed in the technological age.
No, it's behind.
Okay, now I like to think of the salary differential in another way. How many people are intelligent enough and have their stuff together and are capable of, in a year or two, being trained to be a school teacher? Probably about 30% of the population, maybe 20% of the population. You know, you and I have had the discussion. There are about 10% of the population that is not mentally capable of handling the job. Then there's probably another 20% of the population that is, I don't know, they have some addiction issues, or they just aren't responsible enough. They can't get up in the morning. They can't show up to work on time. You know, those just irresponsible people. And then there's some people that just aren't suited for it. They don't have the right temperament. But really, how many people could be the starting center for the Lakers? About 30?
Just not even that many. You got to speak of what's available. Okay, every team has a center. So how many basketball teams are there? 32 or something?
I think there's 30.
I don't know how many there is, but that's about it. But what would be available in the off season? A couple. So yeah, not too many for the job, and actually can perform and score 20 points a game, block shots, defend the basket, run the court.
8-time All-Star.
Yeah, that can do that. So once again, not many.
All right. Now, I don't want to beat up teachers. This goes for talk show hosts too. We're right there, or I would say I am right there in the middle of it. There's a lot of people who can do my job. Will they do it as well and be as entertaining or as funny or as experienced as me? Maybe that little pool of candidates gets a lot smaller, but there's a reason why I'm not making millions of dollars. It's because there's a lot of people who can sit down and talk for an hour or 3 hours and be entertaining. It's not that rare of a skill set. Anthony Davis being 6'11" and still having that skill set is hyper rare, and that's where the value comes from, how rare it is.
Well, kind of goes back to, say, NFL quarterbacks to be the really good ones. Super rare to be that and keep the job for long periods of time. So he passes on a $146 million contract offer, possibly playing again with LeBron James. Well, I know he's going. KD did this at Golden State for a few years. Signed, it was probably 2 or 3 year contract, but he had an opt out every year. And he would opt out every year and re-sign for the next year. And what was he looking to get to? He was looking to get to where he could sign a 5-year, $221 million Supermax contract. So why would Lakers Davis opt out of a contract? Because what he's looking to be in after the next season in a position to be eligible to receive a 5-year, $202 million max contract. Maybe he does a 1 year again, positioning to get to a super max. I don't know all those details, but that's
$56 million.
He's not wanting 154. He's wanting a 200, a 220 million. He's wanting $40 million a year for 5 years. And if his right leg falls off, they still got to pay him. You know, that's what he's playing for. I totally get that. So what's the big deal? Okay, he opts out of the contract. Where else is he going? You think, I'm going to go back to the Pelicans or I'm going to Charlotte or I want to go to Vancouver. No, he's going to play. He's going to be there with LeBron and they're going to work to win a couple titles and he's going to get him a super max contract.
All right. So lessons we could learn from this situation is if you want to make more money and you want to put yourself in a job that is more likely to make more money than you're making now, you're going to have to develop a skill set that is rare, that is sharp, that you are competing against a slimmer and slimmer piece of the population for those jobs, like surgeons. One reason they make so much money is, well, because not a whole lot of people can do it.
And you got to be pretty smart. You got to absorb. You got to work under tremendous pressure, and you got to go to school for one heck of a long time. Who's willing to do that? And, create enormous debt as well. Who's willing to do that? I said on the show the other day, you want to make more money, increase your knowledge, get better at what you do, or find that niche and get really, really good on it. Read an hour a day into your profession or whatever it is you want to do. And you do that for about 4 years, you'll probably become one of the foremost experts in the country on what you do. If you would just take and dedicate that time every day to being the best and just keep building your knowledge and you just own what you do. Kind of two key questions I think are real important that I like to find out. And there's one that I'll share is a super core question in financial planning. But one is, what are your concerns? What are you worried about? What are you needing help with? What problem is there that you have that you need solved? You know, kind of like, you know, what are you here for? And then kind of two part on the next is, what would you like from us? Or what would you like us to do for you? Kind of two core things, you know, what are your concerns? And if we were to work together, how would you like that to look? So I kind of altered the word, but I'm still getting there with that same thing. And really, that's what it really comes down to. And of course, we've got to be able to solve the problems, and we're probably going to discover other things along through this process. But, you know, ultimately, all this, you know, is there retirement without income? Is there?
No.
Not at all. Okay, so then we come to this, the one question that is asked and has to be answered at some point. How much income do you need a month? and most people are thinking in net terms, because it's probably thinking, well, this is what it costs me every month to live, or this is what I would like to have every month. You know, you kind of have two ways it can be answered. It can be answered by need or want, but that is it right there. Now we have to solve for that, but that is the question that has to be answered by everybody. What are you wanting a month for income, or how much do you need every month for income?
I've said it in past shows. This sounds just like when I was, I took a class on kinesiology in college, and it's kind of basically, are you in shape? And it was the first day of class. He's like, everyone, are you in shape? Raise your hand if you're in shape. And then everyone that raised their hand, he's like, all right, well, what does it mean to be in shape? That's the question. What he was trying to make you think is that when someone comes in, they say, I want to be in shape. That's not nearly enough information. Do you want to be able to run a marathon? Do you want to be able to walk up the stairs without wheezing? Do you want to look good in a bikini? Do you want to look good for, you got to be a bridesmaid. I need to know what your goal is before I even know how to begin to train you. That is a different answer to every person, what's in shape.
Now, somebody age 30, or let's go to this, age 25, saying, well, how does that relate to me at age 25? Well, you can think it doesn't, but it does, because you're accumulating money and or should be. For what?
Retirement and investing?
To generate income.
Okay.
One day. So we get right back to that. How much do you need a month? Even at 25, and it's not something you think about, but okay, then what if that's not a concern, not ever a need, not an endpoint, why are you saving money? It could be for something very short term. Well, I want to buy a car, I want to buy a diamond ring, I want to buy a house. Okay. But yeah, that's intermediate, but ultimately, and if we're aware of the world around us, we know one day, one of two things can happen. We don't want to work anymore, or we can't work anymore. And if you can't do that, how are you generating income? So that's, once again, the purpose of savings. So if you're the 25-year-old, okay, well, what's that annual income going to be for you? In today's dollars, we'll talk in today's dollars, what would that be? Well, I figure I might need $40,000 a year, okay? You need at least $1 million put away. So how and when are you going to accumulate that? How much are you needing to save? And let's plug it in at 3%, 4%, or 5% return. So we're not solving that here, but that's where you got to start working towards to get to that point. Okay. This is what it's going to take. But, and then if we inflate it and all, then, you know, how many years out are we talking? 30 years, 40 years? What's that end point? So it is relevant to the 25-year-old. It's relevant to the 18-year-old. It's relevant to the 55-year-old, to getting back to that point. Because at 55, you're looking at your assets and all of a sudden saying, you know, I need this and I'm short. Most people are short because they don't have enough money. That 25-year-old is short because he doesn't have enough money. But he knows he could start thinking about that path to incrementally start getting there. The 55-year-old short, okay, we've got to incrementally fix that. The person thinking about turning on Social Security at age 62 probably needs to take a pause and think about that, because they probably need to defer. You know, speaking in front of a group today, because I had the Social Security lunch and learn, and I said, for some of you here, I can solve your question. Because if you do not have money set aside, you do not have retirement assets, you don't have significant savings. And I'm not putting an amount, but you know if you have money or not. So if you do not have money saved, you have very little emergency money saved, and you're thinking, well, when should I turn on Social Security? I said, I'll answer that for you right now. And first off, I'm going to assume you're still working. Okay. Here's the answer. You should probably work as long as you possibly can and as much as you can, because you've got to still figure out how to save. And one reason you're going to keep working as long as you can, because that means you defer Social Security as long as you can up to age 70, and you can keep working past that. That's fine. But at age 70, you have to turn it on because you've maximized it there. And you've created the largest possible payment, and you're going to need all of that. That's what you're going to have to do if you've not prepared.
Let's talk about the event then. You just brought it up. How'd it go?
Went awesome. Packed house. And I gave them about an hour's worth of material. We did Q&A. It was good. I had fun doing it, of course. Shared a lot of information, some different insights because of the prepared program and some of the questions. It was some good stuff.
Gregory,
but that was kind of like a core, because there's people there that's wanting to know more about this, but don't have any money saved, and they need an answer.
Well, to catch the people up, Gregory hosted a Lunch and Learn today, and it was on Social Security planning. We have another Lunch and Learn coming up on estate planning toward the end of the month.
And we also have on the calendar another Social Security Lunch and Learn, because I was told we have a huge waiting list.
Oh, good.
So we just went and put another one on the calendar, and it's February 4th. We're having two that day, one at noon and one at 5:30. So we're actually holding two that day. That's the demand we're seeing. Look, everybody has to make Social Security. There's two things we have to make decisions on. They don't start themselves. They don't act on themselves, and we can mess it up. One is Social Security. It doesn't ever start itself, and you can probably err on it. It'll be costly. The other is Medicare. Does Medicare turn itself on? No. You have to take action. And then you can mess it up and pay late fees for how long?
The rest of your life.
The rest of your life.
Every month for the rest
of your life. And you need more information. It's not that simple to look, oh, here's a statement. Okay, I'll turn it on 62. I'll turn it on 65. Oh, well, I'll turn on Medicare, but I don't want to do that Part D right now. I'm not sick. I'm healthy. Other people get sick. Okay, mistake. All mistakes.
On the Saturday show, you know, we do the 6 days a week, Monday through Friday at 7, Saturdays 10 to 1. And on the Saturday Spectacular, Jennifer was listening to some of our coverage that we're going to continue after her call, talking about changes the SECURE Act has made to your money. And she said, look, I didn't catch the whole thing. How does this affect my Roth money? Jennifer in Covington. Hey, Jennifer, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Hi, Gregory. Hi, James.
Hey.
I missed a little bit of the beginning of the show, and I think I probably already know the answer, but so this does not apply to Roth IRAs?
The stretch going away impacts all qualified accounts. So you have to take the money out over a 10-year period. So that Roth can't just keep growing and growing and growing out there creating tax-free money. It's going to come out, and it's going to lose its tax-free status because it has to be withdrawn for a non-spouse beneficiary, or none of the exceptions, has to be taken out over 10 years as well. So it does impact it.
So it wouldn't actually make sense for me to be trying to roll over my regular IRA into a Roth IRA for the next, well, with the Trump tax cuts, 2026?
Well, 25. Look, I still think Roth is a significant opportunity because it impacts more, maybe more, your life than leaving it behind. However, when you leave behind an inherited account that's a taxable account, that money's going to be taxed and forced into that window. There might, if strategically speaking, take advantage of tax brackets, there's some efficiencies in Rothing, not to pay Uncle Sam extra money, but create efficiencies over time. It's more of a conversation, and there's a number of things to look at versus having money that is forced to be spent down and could well be at higher tax brackets than you're exposed to now. So it is more of a conversation.
Of all the things the SECURE Act covers, we cannot cover it all in one show. Every report that we do on this is going to be incomplete. Well, there's some things that we haven't even covered because it just affects so few people. Like we haven't gone into the nuances on how small employers can band together and sort of like a co-op and get group coverage plans.
Yeah, and 401ks are good. More people need access to saving money if they will save money. And I think everybody should have opportunities. And 401ks aren't inexpensive. It does, because it's ERISA plans, it's got to fall under ERISA guidelines. You have to have firms handle that aspect, and I'll define it this way, to keep it in compliance with the law. And there's fees for that. And they're wide ranging in what some firms charge. And some firms just, you know, can't afford the fees, can't afford the matching. But people still need to have the opportunity to save. Does everybody save? No. But more should, and more will save if they have the capability. And will they save enough? Maybe not. But if they save something, that's better than nothing, because you're going to need all the money that you have, because you're, you know, this is always ultimately about generating income. And I don't know. I thought Roth lost some of its shine with the Secure Act changes, you know, because of the stretch going away, you could leave a Roth behind, and that's pretty awesome money, multi-generation. Yeah, it's got to take, you still have to, under the old rules, you still had to take RMDs if you inherited a Roth, but you didn't have to spend it down, and it could be multi-generational, and you could grow it more than what the distributions are. So it's a powerful tool for that purpose. I think some of the shine is gone from it, because now it has to be spent down in 10 years. It's not the multi-generational thing, but if you did it through a Roth, you are leaving on money that is super tax efficient. But I think the Roth actually, so it's lost some of its shine, but one of the core things having Roth IRA, especially in your retirement, your working lifetime, because that is money that you can utilize that won't push you into higher tax brackets. If it's the income you're taking from and only other source of Social Security, it itself will not cause your Social Security to be taxed, because it won't go on the 1040. It is a powerful tool to open up more income that you can use without negatively impacting your income, your retirement, your taxes. I think the focus might be put on more that it's something that you should do, you should have, that really makes sense for you. You think about it, when you have Social Security, that we know 15% under the law, you will have at least 15% of your Social Security income that will not be taxed. 15%. Now, it could be more depending on your income. And once again, if the income's low enough. Now, how do they come to figure out how much Social Security is going to be taxed? Well, they take half of your Social Security income and your other income, and where do you fall in? Or is it 50% inclusive, or is it 85% inclusive in your taxes? And let's say you come in under that threshold and it's not being taxed at all. So, but you're needing other income. And if you take some from that IRA, that's taxable stuff as ordinary income. But if you turn on Roth, it's not going to be taxed. So what's your tax bracket? Could possibly be zero if you're managing it right. And who's to say, why can't you save Roth money only? You can. It can be a goal. It's something you can do, but start thinking about it that way. I think it is still the powerful tool, but it's so much of the time, I think maybe it's been thought of as leave behind money, but it might be use this money in retirement.
That's one of the things we're going to cover with Wes Blanchard this Saturday. He's going to be our guest. He's the estate planning attorney that we use as part of our rotating cast of financial geniuses on the show. And look, it's only been a month since he's been on the show, but so much has happened since then. The Secure Act being passed, we haven't even talked to him since that. So this will be the first chance to really dig deep in the estate planning side of this, the Secure Act changes, which is huge. But
I don't know, that combined with Roth and Social Security are really neat things that we have access to. We can create Roth income by saving there, but Social Security is something, unless we're working for an employer like the state, for example, and opting out of Social Security, you know, we all have that resource. And yes, it's going to be around. We can talk more about that later, but the Social Security's not going away, and it is part of your options. You should have multiple streams of income, and it's part of that, and you need to make good decisions with that. And one of it is to, you know, maybe you need to build a Social Security bridge so you can defer longer. Hey, if you have a financial situation and looking for a little bit of help, call my office. It's 504-832-9200. Go check out gregoryricks.com.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.